Welcome to the Appen Podcast, everybody. I'm sitting here with the team from Skills Hive. I have Mike.
Hi there, guys.
And Alan in front of me.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about Skills Hive, what the business does, who they are, talk a little bit about the work they've been doing with the, I'll say the younger generation, but it's the millennials, and also a little bit about the future, their vision, and how they see the future for themselves. So Mike, tell me a little bit about Skills Hive, how you and Alan met, maybe a little bit about your background and what you guys are actually doing.
Okay, sure. So Skills Hive is basically all about helping get people and projects where they need to be. So we can put together pop-up teams within a week to deliver opportunities for you and your business now. That's the sort of soundbite. Now, the origins of that go back a good sort of 6 or 7 years or so, when I was leaving the corporate world and looking at, well, how do businesses stay agile? What can I do to be a part of that? How do I help smaller businesses to stay adaptable but still grow and grow their revenue, grow their profitability? And I worked out pretty quickly that the biggest risk to maintaining that as a USP is to employ more people and go move to bigger premises and have loads of fixed cost. So looking at what the alternatives were back then as to avoiding that, it was things like people per hour and freelancer.com and all the rest of it. So I tried those things out, looked at their models and thought, do you know what, they just commoditize people. They just turn, you know, people into pound signs and it doesn't seem to work. You know, you're asked to put a very woolly brief on to a what in effect is a simplistic jobs board, and you just end up with an inbox full of emails saying, I don't understand what you want, but I need some work, and I cost £5 an hour, £10 an hour, and it just becomes this bidding war, and it's very hard to have any sort of strategic relationships and get stuff done. So anyway, we came up with an alternative, and originally the concept was software as a service, create a suite of tools so that businesses could be more strategic about building teams of freelancers and having this pool of people available to them as and when they needed them on a pay-as-you-go basis.
So just to interrupt there, do you vet the pool of talent that you've got going?
Yeah, so at that point in time, it was about the individual companies needed to just do a little bit of research on each of those, and we would encourage them to start with something small and test them out, right? And we still sort of use that model ourselves today. But what we realized pretty quickly is the world, or certainly that sort of size of business, wasn't ready to do that for themselves. They weren't ready to go out and spend time researching and sort of recruiting, as it were. So we quite quickly had to flip into more of a service model and offer that as part of the solution. And that's pretty much where we're still at today. And there's a lot of value in providing that as a service.
Yeah, there's one thing I want to touch on. Sorry, Alan, I realised that.
I haven't got to the point in time where Alan...
but I just want to touch a little bit on that, because I was working at a company previously where they started everything, all of their development, through a team built up through Upwork. Mm-hmm. And as they grew, they still kind of said to me, oh, I want to keep building this team via Upwork. And for me, I was, well, it didn't make sense because A, it's a disparate and disjointed set of people that you've got on there. And it's great for small things like Fiverr, Upwork. They're all great for, you know, if you want to do something small, very, very small. Like I've done some logo projects or whatever it is through them. But actually trying to build a cohesive team and get them all thinking and working in the same direction through a bunch of guys who you don't know how, when they're working, what their motivations are is quite tough. So I guess that's the thing that Skills Hive solves. It gives you the flexibility, the pop-up flexibility, but also then builds that team and keeps them motivated and in the direction of it.
In effect, you're sort of outsourcing the management aspect and the consistency aspect and the quality assurance aspect. And that's very much what we charge for, on our end is, look, we'll give you one point of contact, we'll stay in close touch with you to maintain a solid understanding of the evolving strategy, the evolving brief, and we do acknowledge that changes are given, and it's about how we then help you manage change. So yeah, I'd agree that is absolutely possible through us. The other thing we'd look to do, going back to getting people where they want to be, if someone is looking for a longer term role and a client is looking to build a longer term team, we're not saying never invest in long term sort of fixed posts. I think that is absolutely necessary. It's more about only do it when it is necessary and not for the sake of it, right?
So then, Alan, did you were you guys started together or did you join the team?
No, so basically from my side, I just sort of come to a point in my corporate career where I was working for, first of all, Deutsche Telekom. Then I worked for Apple for over 3 years, delivering pre-release product. And that was great. But what we found with the connected world, especially working with an American company, was you kind of, they could get you working 24/7. That seemed to be what the connected world was doing, just making the teams work harder and longer sort of thing, albeit well rewarded. But at some point I thought I need to break from this. So I left to do my MBA at Greenwich University, bumped into Mike, and he discussed this about how he'd like to, you know, he's got this talent pool and he puts together for work. And I thought, that's a really interesting concept. I'd like to try that. Did a few test projects with him. And I realised that actually, you know what, having the right people to do the job is that much more important than just sticking with the same team and making them work longer, if you like, to do the same job, much more productive. And I was really impressed that with Skills Hive, we could turn projects around in weeks, where even at the likes of Apple, a similar sort of software cycle was months. So that was quite an impressive proof of concept for me anyway.
This is really interesting because obviously, Mike, you come from the Royal Mail background, I guess.
Yeah.
That's no secret. And so that's obviously a big public, it was a public entity when you when you were working there, and then you coming from Apple, which is, you know, where everyone wants to work. What I find interesting is that you both found, from two totally different backgrounds, you find the same issue. Mm. So does that mean that the tech giants, tech companies are actually becoming more like monolithic, like the old BTs and the old Royal Mails of the world, or do you see, like, is that something that you can see?
Certainly to a certain extent. So I think they are using the connectivity, the technology which has created this connectivity in the world, but they're using it within their existing type Fordism type working, where it's a set team and it's just making them be connected more and work harder. So what I think they're missing, and what I saw at Skills Hive, is the ability to pick someone from the pool who's just right for that job. So for instance, going back to your people using Upwork, so I think that's the example where someone could like afford to get a intern or graduate to do a job for them, but they'd be a bit nervous and it'd be a bit disparate on a big project. Whereas Skills Hive would put together a team with a graduate and maybe a senior developer overseeing their work. You get the best of both worlds in terms of you should have a quality assurance, and then you've got the new graduate who would have all the new ideas coming along, but maybe not working to industrial standards. And on top of that, you get a point of contact, as Mike said, looking after the client and interfacing and providing that quality assurance guarantee.
So if I was to put my client hat on, one thing I'd say is, okay, sounds nice that, you know, I can have a team that comes for a very short period of time to help bolster some efforts that we've got going at the moment. But then surely when that's finished, all the knowledge leaves, or how do you kind of mitigate against that?
So we would design a sort of end-to-end solution and sort of say, well, look, where next? Where next? Where next? And it's about phases that keep focused on this question of where are you trying to get to and how can we help? So we talk a lot about collaboration, but for us, it's as simple as that. It doesn't have to end. It's where do you want to get to next and how can we help? So in that instance, it might well be, well, we want to embed that knowledge and that capability within our existing teams. Okay, let's bring in a training team in the next phase. Let's run the next phase of delivery with some people that might be interested in joining your team. So there's a number of options.
So what are the obstacles you've found when you're pitching to new businesses? Because obviously this is a unique kind of concept. I wouldn't say it's, you know, there are other companies that do the same things, but not as in the style that you guys are doing it, let's say. So are there kind of certain challenges that you face at every single client that you try to overcome? I mean, if people listening here, if they're thinking, I like this idea, but how can I sell it to my management team?
Yeah. I think for us, it's always about test and improve. So we would always offer to test the concept on something that's low risk, right? So that's the general approach for dealing with any sort of objections. But what we have found is that there are sweet spots where it just makes sense as a concept. So we've done a lot of work in the sort of agency space where they want to keep their team's small. They've got various skill sets that they need to bolster at certain points in time when they're dealing with a client. It might be ahead of a pitch where they need to do some research. It might be they need some extra design work done to hit a deadline. It might well be then on something more technical like a website build. So they've designed a site, but they want someone else to build it. Or it could be on a longer tail set of solutions where they want to stay in touch with a client, but they don't have any sort of repeat services. So we'd work with them to develop products and services around things like social media management, and we put together a team that can deliver that for their client base. Same goes for blog writing or perhaps some search engine optimization type work or PPC. So, you know, we have all those skills in our network, and it's then about tailoring a bespoke team for each client at each point in time where they need it.
So then I guess, Alan, you come in when the team is put together and actually execute the project plan, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm there from the start in that I'm overseeing, you know, is that project brief correct? And then, yeah, from that point onwards, we're thinking about what sort of team members we can come in and, you know, and if it is an ongoing project from before, it's quite often it might be a developer, but it's not necessary. We've done the same. We've used existing developers who've worked before, but we've captured the requirements before and we've captured what's been done before on our using whatever Trello or whatever balls we're using. So we have that history there so that we can put in a replacement if need be. So there is some sort of continuity. But yeah, I'll be there to sort of pick it up and get everyone running on the project, basically.
So it kind of sounds to me that there's a lot of different areas you can. So you're talking about design, training, development. So I guess that's web development or just
software
development. Yeah. So are there any kind of areas that this kind of model doesn't work for?
I think now that we've refined the processes, and that's another thing that Alan's really brought to the table. So he was still studying well when he joined us initially, and in fact, his project on his MBA course included looking at what we were doing, sort of talking about how it can be applied in different ways. And so we've shored up a lot of the processes. We've nailed which tools we want to use to deliver certain ways of working, and we've done various proof of concepts around different sectors and audiences. For us now, it's about taking it to as far up the sort of strategic end of the value chain as we can, which is why we're working with a lot of consultants and, you know, virtual CTOs and virtual CFOs and virtual CMOs, etc., to take the model to an area where I think it's going to have best impact, which is early stage investment or, well, you know, sort of Series A, Series B, but where people or investors have just acquired a company and they've got a clear idea of what needs to be done, but they need to go into more detail on each of those recommendations and then start delivering on those as quickly as possible. And I think this is now the real sweet spot for this model.
So in a way, you're trying to get you're getting in from the very start for the whole kind of life cycle of even the company, let's say.
Yeah.
So you get in at the early stage, help with the strategy, and then help build the teams to fulfill that strategy.
Yeah, we've sort of defined it as three big steps. So establish the strategy. So you've got various inputs to that strategy, the due diligence report, etc., the existing business plan that's been bought into from the incumbent management team, and the various ideas that are coming from the people around the business and their customers. And then we lock that down with our consultant teams, working with the management team and whoever's on the board, etc., and say, okay, this is what we're going to deliver in phase one, based on what we know, but it's adaptable, right? So that's the first step is then establish strategy. Second step, design solutions. So again, that plays to another area of our network around the next specialist expertise that are required for each deliverable and each output and outcome. And then the final part is deliver results. So let's get the most we can out of the budget to create an ROI as quickly as possible. So that involves, you know, minimum viable products within the solution design phase. Okay, let's now deliver that and iterate so that these investors are getting a return and they're seeing traction towards their exit sooner.
So are there any kind of particular set of companies or size of companies or whatever it is that you're targeting?
Yeah, we're still researching at the moment, but there seems to be a real clear audience that are starting to show an interest. So this would be people that are investing maybe 2 to 20 million to gain just over 50% holding. So, you know, we're talking private equity houses, perhaps some VCs, total portfolio of several hundred million, but they're seeing this sweet spot then of, all right, let's turn around these businesses that have real growth potential, that have a turnover of say 5 to 100 million max. I don't see there being any sector specific opportunity. I think most businesses are going to depend on data and technology going forward, and those are key themes. But I think the way we'd probably position this now is to say, okay, your big four management consultancy firms will target larger companies, larger investments. Your tier two will go just below that. Actually, there's a huge growth area just below that that can't be served by that model, because there just isn't the margin in it for those players, right? Whereas we're just working on, let's create work for freelancers and flexible workers who are happy to negotiate on day rate because they're looking for certain types of experiences that we can give them to help them get where they want to go in their individual careers. And I think that's a big part of this collaborative framework is, yes, we can help the business get to where it wants to go, but at the same time, we have exactly the same conversation with every individual in every team. How can we help you get where you want to go? What sort of experience do you need? What sort of target day rate are you looking at? How do we put you into the right team at the right time?
So I guess, I want to touch on that in a little bit, but taking a step back slightly. So if you were going to kind of briefly describe the value that you're going to bring to investors, mm-hmm. and then the value you're going to bring to SMEs, how would you describe those two things?
Okay. So for investors, it's very much about getting to exit either quicker or at a higher value by accelerating the delivery of the changes that they know need to happen. With the founders, the SMEs and the management teams, it's about saying, look, you guys want the same things. If there's anything that you feel you can't deliver on your own, we're here to help. If that means a short-term phased approach with outside resource to start with, we can do that. If you then want to bring people in for a longer-term role, we can help you do that more efficiently than traditional recruitment methods. And all the time, we're getting traction against these objectives and these targets that are key to delivering the exit that everyone's signed up to.
So then, touching on the point where you mentioned about getting resources in and talking to them and finding out what they want to do and how they want to, you know, what their career paths or, let's say, motivations are and putting them on the right projects. I think we're moving into that whole gig economy now. Everyone talks about it. And you know, but in the world of IT with Upwork and Fiverr, that's pretty much the gig economy, right? You put a gig out and someone then bids on it. How have you seen, now obviously you guys, we're sitting in the Ravensbourne University for the listeners. Now you guys are working quite a lot with the next set of graduates that are coming through. And I think what would be interesting to some of the listeners who are obviously, we're all in our 40s, so of a generation, right?
Apart from Alan.
Yeah.
We all have our hair, though, at least. So that's
oh, yeah. He looks younger than me.
But I think they would be interested in understanding a little bit more about what's coming out of universities, right? What are the motivations of the kids coming out of university at the moment? And how does that kind of differ from, let's say, when we were coming out, which is...
As Mike alluded to, I did, actually used Skills Hive as my case study for my dissertation. And a lot of the current research points to the sort of traditional values of wage and reward are being replaced by actually emotional engagement. And I think the graduates coming out of university really reflect that in that they'd much rather choose a place to work which really develops their needs and their skills, and that's sort of starting to dominate much more than how much the actual financial reward would be. And I think that's very different from our generation. And our generation was obviously 9 till 5, and try to get as much as you can from that. And now that's changing. And I think that is actually a massive challenge and opportunity for anyone. And anyone who can get that right at the moment is you know, well set for the next few years, and I'd like to think we're doing that at Skills Hive. One particular feature of that is what some people call brand citizenship, in that you would ask your employees anonymously, would they recommend Skills Hive to their friends, basically. And I'm pleased to say, all the people I asked, at least, did turn around and say yes, definitely, because they're just offering that training, and they're offering their support module, which they don't get with the likes of Upwork, etc., necessarily. So that really is the difference. In terms of those two generations working with each other, I think the biggest challenge for our generation is we work with a set team. Everyone has set responsibilities. Whereas you're working in a gig economy, these people are not necessarily just dedicated to you. They're doing several stuff. So it's all about making sure those people are on board and will do the work that that you know, that's been allocated to them, because quite often you're not seeing them. They're involved in other work. And for graduates, they're not used to sort of saying, reporting to people. They're just used to doing different bits of work on the internet. So that's the biggest challenge going forward, I think. So,
but that's a huge clash, right?
And it is a huge clash.
Because, you know, we're sitting there, I mean, we run projects, obviously, all the time.
Yeah.
And for us, it's like, okay, we need to know that the resource is going to be around if they need to answer questions, or a client needs something, or X, Y, and Z. And if they've disappeared, then...
Yeah, so I think a skills hive, you know, a key element of that is the project manager almost over-manages. And there is, again, research to show that if you're working with disparate team members, that's the way you've got to go. You've got to over-manage, you've got to have a requirements board, and everyone knows exactly what they're doing. Otherwise, it just tends to fall apart, as opposed to a sort of 9-to-5 set of colleagues. But the benefit is, you could, as we said, alluded to earlier, you can just bring in the top talent to do the right job. And isn't that a bit of way of working going forward?
Well, do you have to do much education to your clients about the way you work?
To a certain degree, but I mean, the main point of the way the skills hive model works is because you've got the project manager being the point of contact there, you know, you just said, well, any issues, just contact the project manager. And so that bridges that gap. That's what they would have done
previously,
in the traditional model. So that bridges that gap there. We do invite the clients quite often to come, and we have a client channel, and we invite the developers to there. So that's a slight new thing, as opposed to previously, probably the project manager would only be the person interfacing. That's still the case, but we're happy to let the developers see what's happening with the client and how the project manager's speaking to the client. Much more efficient way of working.
It's about being flexible and responding to the needs of the situation. And I think in terms of educating clients, we have looked at possibly running some courses around our view of the Agile manifesto and the way we apply the principles of Agile to everything we do. So, you know, it's people over process, it's an output and an outcome over endless documentation, it's, you know, requirements over contracts, and acknowledging that change is a given, and it's all about how we work together to manage that change. So having an always on conversation with a client and with the team on Slack channels that we use, and understanding where it's going to be more efficient to turn that into one conversation for a period of time, just sort of shows that it's mainly about mindset than methodology, really. And you're right, if the client hasn't bought into that, then it can be difficult. But compared with 7 years ago, we're finding a lot more clients that buy into that mindset, which is fantastic.
Yeah, cool. One thing I'd like to touch on again is the Apple thing, because I find that quite interesting. Because obviously a lot of people I've met coming out of university, they want to go to Google, they want to go to Facebook, they want to go to Apple. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that actually Skills Hive offers a more attractive place to work than those larger companies, simply because they've now become larger companies and they're kind of adopting the old methodologies that were there. And so is this the way of the future? Is Skills Hive the future?
Yeah, I mean, for a certain set of graduates, that will always be the ambition. And if that's what they want to do and experience, because perhaps they've never experienced it, that's the way to go then. You know, follow that. And you will be, like I did, a fantastic experience. But I think it's very much this hard way of working is quite disruptive to the way they work. And, you know, I like to think we can go and eat their lunches quite often.
Right.
Because they will always be, yes, they'll have the financial resources behind them, but when it comes to adopting a new system etc., etc., they will always be a bit slower, more cautious, and have their way of working that will take quite a long while to turn around. Whereas if we come up with a new technology or a new team collaboration tool, we can adopt that quite quickly. So it's very much depending on what you want. If you want to really have that name and experience that big corporate situation, you know, it's still going to be a fantastic experience. Apple's still doing quite well last time I looked. So that sort of security against being your own boss and being able to change the process within the company, the size of skills hive.
Well, I think the point you make about security, actually, I think a lot of the young people that we work with and that attend the swarm events that we do and that sort of thing at universities, they don't have the same concept of security that we did. I mean, part of the reason I left Royal Mail was because I felt it was a secure job, but at one point they were doing a restructure every 6 months, but offering me a generous pay package to leave, and at which point leaving became more secure than staying. So, you know, figure that one out. But these guys are definitely attracted to these big brands still, mainly because of the sort of things that their parents say to them, I'm finding. When they do think about how they might get there, which is part of our message, is, well, look, are you going to walk straight in there and get a role there? How many places do they have on their grad scheme? What other routes do you have to get in there? How might you get noticed? What experience do you need before they'll listen to you? And we start to say, well, look, you can create those experiences for yourselves through this sort of skills hive model. And then once they get involved and they start to see how it all works and experience it firsthand, a good number of them change their mind and say, do you know what, I'm not sure I do want to work for these bigger companies. I'm not sure that was what I wanted in the first place. And then others certainly aren't taking as long to leave as I did, that go in straight from university. In fact, I'm meeting with someone tomorrow evening who is ready to set up on his own now, and he's about 5 or 6 years into his career, sort of mid-20s. And I think that's partly due to the way the world has changed. You know, it's easier to research and fund your own startup these days than it ever was before. But I also think that everyone that we work with is carving their own path, and it's about helping them get the experience they need to make those decisions. Yeah.
So what's the future hold for Skills Hive? I think what's interesting here is because you're working with such a, you know, your teams are quite diverse, and also the people that you're working with are younger and quite diverse, the nature of the organisation will kind of, I guess, move along with them, right? So where do you see the future of Skills Hive, and from a business team perspective, but also from the services you're offering?
Shall I go first on that one, Alan?
I mean, very much on moving into the strategic role of companies as we've sort of targeted now. That's the way I do see the value in that, as opposed to the sort of way we've been working, like through referrals, if you like, sure, which is okay. But it's very much, if you can get into the consultancy, it much sort of, you're up there right at the start and working with the company from the top. So
yeah. I think what that will mean is that we'll get multiple projects per client and multiple clients per relationship in this investment space. And that's the same sort of model as we've had in the agency space, but it's just at a more strategic level. And certainly speaking with the likes of yourselves and other consultant type resource and people that are part of that equation, all of you guys as well are thinking, okay, so how can I benefit from this model in the day-to-day of what I do? So it's not a linear journey. It's not a straightforward process. It is a more organic sort of collaborative model that says, where are you trying to get to? What can we do to help? Where should we start? You know?
Yeah, and I think that's where the value is. I think it's more of a long-term engagement, right, where you can actually provide value all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each stage of the company from beginning to growth to multinationals, let's say, if that does happen.
I don't see why not. But as I said before, it's not to say that companies don't need fixed-term employees. Absolutely they do. But it's then how do you work with the Skills Hive model to accelerate everything around that core team. Yeah.
All right. One final question for you guys. If you could go back 20 years and give advice to yourself, 20 years younger version of yourself, what would that advice be?
For me, it would be understand yourself a bit more and understand your personality a bit more before. 20 years ago, I just chased getting a better paid job, getting a more recognised position. And I suppose that was good because that's how I ended up working for Apple, etc. But for me now, it's much more important that I would have gone back and said, understand your Myers-Briggs personality traits, etc. Because you really want to be doing something that makes you happy and that suits you.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be too dissimilar for me. I think probably... I don't know. I think what happened in my career was I got given lots of opportunity, but I just took every opportunity that came to me, and I didn't have a longer term strategy really. I'm not saying that that's what I needed at the time. I think the big thing for me was I took a corporate type role, reasonably well paid, with lots of progression and opportunity, over and above starting my own business, which was what I'd always planned to do while I was at university. It just, the barriers seemed to be too big. I think, you know, 20 years ago, they probably were still too big. If I did the same today, they wouldn't be. But I think that maybe if I'd have spoken to the right people at the right time, I would have seen that there was an alternative to going into, or at least I could have, you know, taken that leap sooner rather than waiting 15 years.
Know yourself and know your options, I guess. But then,
yeah.
That's what you'll get. Yeah, that's exactly what you said. You're giving to the next generation, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. And you're probably spot on there. We're telling everyone else what we would have told ourselves,
which is good.
Yeah,
excellent. So one last piece of information is that the Atom website will be launched next week, and the guys at Skills Hive have been creating that and have designed it, and see, I'm writing a little bit of the content, but these guys have been doing all the hard work, and so look forward to that, and that'll be another LinkedIn post out there,
and another example of collaboration in practice. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's worked very well. All right, thanks guys for that, and have a good day.
Thanks. Thank you.
Cheers.